to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. As summer fades away and the United States prepares for a potential second wave of coronavirus disease 2019, or COVID-19, cases, many are worried that economic impacts and rising healthcare costs will continue unless action is taken. Europe's competitive biosimilar market has proven that biosimilars have the potential to lower costs, but with existing barriers such as lack of education and payer oversight of formularies, and the continuing pandemic, there is some debate on whether biosimilars will have the same impact in the United States. We sat down with Dr. Julie Kennerly-Shaw, Assistant Director of Pharmacy at the Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center at James Cancer Hospital and Solove Research Institute, to discuss how biosimilars can help curb costs in the time of COVID-19 and beyond. So to start us off, how has COVID-19 changed the usage of biosimilars, and has it caused any interruption or reduction?
The biggest impact of COVID-19, in my opinion, has been associated with the bandwidth of providers and hospital administrators and our ability to focus on strategic priorities outside of COVID-19. And I think that's been the most significant impact in terms of evaluation of implementation of biosimilars as a strategic priority for organizations. I believe that patient volumes have stabilized. We are starting to see a renewed energy towards focus on other strategic priorities, including biosimilars.
Are biosimilar discounts more meaningful in the time of COVID-19?
I think biosimilar discounts have always been meaningful. However, I do believe that as health systems look toward recovery from the economic impacts of COVID-19, there will be continued emphasis on the importance of any cost savings measures, including discounts for biosimilars.
As a follow-up to this, how significant are these discounts? Are they achieving large savings, and are these being passed along to patients?
There's a wide range of discounts for biosimilars. There was a recent study from, I believe, Johns Hopkins that looked at savings opportunities for biosimilars. They looked at infliximab and filgrastim, and they showed that biosimilars represented 68% and 74% of the reference products for these medications. So if you take that and you multiply those savings by a large number of patients, and then you take into account all of the other biologic medications that have biosimilars in the pipeline or already on the market, I think you start to see pretty large projections of potential cost savings to the health system and to patients. I say that with the caveat that utilization of a biosimilar does not always directly equate to a decreased copay, for example, for a patient. Sometimes it does, but it doesn't always equate to a direct savings to the patient. However, we all know that decreased savings to the health system as a whole ultimately can lead to lower insurance premiums and overall less cost to individual patients.
What sort of impact can biosimilars have on curbing the economic effects of COVID-19?
Biosimilars can have a significant impact on curbing the economic effects of COVID-19, but this really has to be driven by providers and not by payers mandating the utilization of a specific biosimilar. I think it's vitally important that we be cognizant of patient safety implications of biosimilar utilization, particularly if a payer is trying to mandate a specific biosimilar. Certainly, I think we're all committed to utilization of biosimilars and savings to the health system as a whole, but I think we need to balance that with what's best for our patients, particularly in an area like oncology.
What more needs to be done in terms of education on biosimilars, especially in the oncology field?
I think providers really need continued education on the FDA approval process. The FDA has been clear that biosimilar products can be used in patients who have previously been treated with the reference product, as well as in patients that are treatment naive. And the clinician's view currently in the literature shows that physicians are more hesitant in naive patients versus experienced patients, more hesitant in treatment versus supportive care, and more hesitant in curative versus palliative. So I do think that there's a disconnect in some instances between what we know about biosimilars and their approval process and hesitancy from frontline physicians to utilize biosimilars.
What are your thoughts on step therapy requirements and their impact on biosimilar utilization?
I believe that step therapy requirements are tactics that are used to drive utilization of a specific biosimilar by payers, and I do not believe that that is what is in the best interest of our patients. I think in order for biosimilars to be successful both fiscally and from a patient safety perspective, the best solution is that we increase biosimilar utilization by allowing the health system or the provider to determine the appropriate biosimilar for that patient, taking into account other medications that are on formulary, kind of health system resources, as opposed to a payer mandating a specific biosimilar through step therapy.
How objective do you feel the current literature is on biosimilars? How helpful is it to patients and physicians? And is more clarity needed?
I think that the results of the current literature are pretty clear, especially when you take into account studies on biosimilars from our colleagues in Europe, for example. However, there is still this hesitancy with physicians and certainly with patients. You know, there's a recent study that looked at patients with an autoimmune disease that were taking a biologic that asked them a series of questions, and 85% of patients were concerned that biosimilars would not treat their disease well. And that's concerning if we really want to see widespread implementation of biosimilars. And so I believe the first step is to ensure that our physicians are very well educated on biosimilars so that they can appropriately articulate what is a complex approval process and a complex concept in a patient-friendly manner that puts patients at ease and instills confidence in them. There's a phenomenon known as the nocebo effect, in which patients who were receiving a biosimilar were actually more likely to discontinue versus those that were not receiving a biosimilar in an open-label study. And so I think we have to be cognizant of this nocebo effect and ensure that our providers have in-depth knowledge of biosimilars and they can appropriately articulate that to patients. And I do believe that pharmacists, clinical pharmacists in hematology oncology, can play a vital role in educating patients on biosimilars to ensure their success.
Now, multiple individual payers may dictate preferred biosimilars without consulting physicians, which may force practices to manage multiple biosimilars for the same molecule. What do you think of this?
I think this is a practice that prioritizes financial benefits over patient safety, and I feel very strongly that it is in the best interest of our patients that individual payers do not dictate preferred biosimilars. I believe that it can cause delays in provision of life-saving cancer medications. I believe that it introduces the opportunity for patient errors to occur due to look-alike, sound-alike challenges. I think it is impossible for health systems to stock every biosimilar that comes to market, and we will be forced to make really challenging decisions as to how to best serve our patients if payers continue to dictate preferred biosimilars. From my perspective, health systems are excited to implement biosimilars. I think we know the potential financial benefits to healthcare in the United States as a whole. However, having individual payers dictate preferred biosimilars as opposed to mandating a biosimilar just introduces unnecessary opportunity for patient delays and patient safety errors to occur.
Well, Dr. Kennelly Shaw, thank you for sharing your insights with us, and thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes, and until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.